Today we're going to speak about the early life of the Rambam. Now the Rambam was born in 1135, he died in 1204, so he lives towards the end of the Golden Age of Spain. The Golden Age of Spain lasted from 900 to 1200, and it was a time of prosperity for Jews in Muslim Spain and North Africa and Egypt. And life was good for the Jews because the Muslims in general were moderate. However, in the middle of the 12th century, more extremist Muslims started conquering large areas of Muslim Spain, North Africa. In 1145, the Almohads conquered Fez in Morocco, a city with a large Jewish population with a significant Jewish history. The Rif, Rav Yitzchak Alfasi, was the Gadol of Sephardic during the 11th century. He lived most of his life in Fez. And there, the Jews were given the choice of embracing Islam, emigrating, or being executed. Most of the Jews there pretended to accept the Mohammedan creed, the Muslim creed, and they waited for better times. They could still practice Judaism in private. In 1148, the Almohads conquered Cordova. Now, the Rambam was born, Moshe ben Maimon was born in Cordova. So this is around the time of the Rambam's Bar Mitzvah. The Almohads conquered Cordova. They burned the synagogues, the Bate Midrash. And the family of the Rambam decides to leave. The Rambam, Rav Moshe's father, was Rav Maimon. He was a Talmudic scholar. He had studied the methods of Talmudic scholar of study from the Rimigash in Lucena. Rimigash was a primary student of the Rif. Rav Maimon came from a family of scholars and judges, and his family tree traced its descent to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi and ultimately David HaMelech. So he had Yichus there. Rav Maimon and his family leave Cordova. They spend about 9 years wandering until about 1158, 1159, when they arrive in Fez, Morocco. There is a story about the Rambam when he was a teenager. It was actually in Heschel's biography of the Rambam. He tells the following story, that Rav Maimon, who was the chief judge in Cordova, was told in a dream to marry the daughter of the butcher. Now Rav Maimon listened and he worried what kind of son would he be granted. His wife gave birth to Moshe. She died in childbirth. And this young Moshe showed little joy in scholarship, and the father hurled harsh words at the boy. He said, "You were born from the lowest levels of life." So Moshe leaves his father's house and disappeared. And meanwhile, Maimon immersed himself in the study of Torah. He began to write a commentary of Torah, a commentary on the Talmud, and he conversed with educated men of the city, and he attended lectures of visiting scholars. One day, the Jews in the great synagogue were listening to an unusual discourse, while the audience admired the great knowledge of the unknown lecturer. When the speaker finally removed his talus from his face after the lecture, everyone saw that it was the son of Rav Maimon. And he turned out to obviously be a Torah personality who was unparalleled in his generation and in many, many generations. In Fez, in his youth, the Rambam studied the sciences and logic and philosophy. He studied the philosophy of Sadia Gaon, of Bachya ibn Pakuda, Rabbi Yehuda Levi, ibn Ezra, and Aristotle, among others. However, the Rambam concentrated more on studying Tanakh, the Mishnah, and the Talmud, and any of the sciences. And he decides to write a commentary on the Mishnah a year before he arrives in Fez. This was the first major work that he wrote. He's known primarily for writing his commentary on the Mishnah, his magnum opus, the Yad HaChazakah, his Code of Jewish Law, the Sefer HaMitzvos, and the Mor Nevuchim, the Guide to the Perplexed. His first major work was the commentary of the Mishnah, which he begins to write at the age of 23 and he completes it at the age of 30. Now, he writes his commentary in Judeo-Arabic, and it was later translated into Hebrew by a number of translators, including Shmuel ibn Tibon. And why does he write this commentary on the Mishnah? So he tells us in his Hakdama to the Mishnah, it's an introduction. He writes that only a keen-witted, experienced student can understand the full meaning of the Mishnah through the Talmud, and it's often necessary to study several tractates of Talmud to understand one particular set of halachos. And additionally, the Talmud often claims that the Mishnaic passage in question is defective, or the Mishnah only expresses the opinion of someone, but we may follow another opinion. And it's very hard to know what the bottom line halacha is and what we're supposed to do based on just simply reading the Mishnah. And the Gemara is very difficult to go through to find out what the halacha is. And therefore, the Rambam came up with a plan of writing a commentary on the Mishnah, which would enable one to avoid the Talmud. If one did not have the time or the ability to find his way through the Talmud, he would at least have the possibility of informing himself quickly and easily about all questions of law. And the goal was to restore the Mishnah as an independent method of study. He writes, for example, that the goal is that number one, he says that he wants it to be clear. He gave four different purposes. The first purpose is that the Mishnah should be clear. You don't have to search in many different places, as mentioned. And the second is to know kedas mi hamaseh, who should we hold like. Hashlishis, the third, is to go through some analytical understanding or discussion of summary, perhaps, of some of the Talmudic discussions relating to the Mishnah. Not the lengthy give and take, but a taste of it. And essentially, to provide a panoramic view of the Talmud throughout his commentary, what he calls V'yeh K'misha Heikiv is called a Talmud. That's that panoramic view. And additionally, he says, it's also good if you already learned the Gemara, so it's a wonderful refresher, and he could have it on his fingertips. The Rambam, the truth is, the Rambam wrote three major introductions in his commentary. He writes his introduction to the Mishnah, to his commentary on the Mishnah, in the very beginning, where he discusses why he's writing this work. He writes an introduction to the 10th chapter of Maseches Sanhedrin called Perek HaChelek, in which he set down a creed of the 13 principles of faith, the Yud Gimel Ikari Emuna, and as a prelude to his comments on Pirkei Avos, he wrote 8 chapters devoted to ethics, what is known as Shemona Prakim. Now, while the Rambam is in Fez, again, he has to flee with his family when he's about 13 from Spain. So when he arrives in Fez, or while he is in Fez, I'm sorry, he focused on his work, on his commentary on the Mishnah. But at some point, he was forced to respond to an anonymous respondent who condemned all pseudo-converts, all secret Jews, as traitors, and expelled them from Judaism. This individual, the rabbi wrote a work called Igeres Hashmad, and he writes about an individual who essentially wrote that anyone who declares that Muhammad is the messenger of God is Kafar Bashem Elokei Yisrael. He has rejected God, and he's not part of the Jewish people. And it's like he's Kofar B'chol Torah Kula. It's like he's denied the entire Torah. What happened was, a question was posed to this respondent on whether one should profess the Shahada, that there's no God but Allah, and Muhammad is the messenger of Allah. Can you do that to avoid being slain and having one's orphaned children become Muslims? Or should you refuse to recite and be slain as the Torah requires because uttering the Shahada leads to abandoning all commandments? And again, this respondent said, better die rather than declare allegiance to Muhammad. Now, the Rambam in his Igeres Hashmad first says that Kadosh Baruch Hu, God loves all Jews, even those that have sinned, and that he goes through how Chazal point out how Moshe Rabbeinu was criticized for criticizing the Jewish people, and Eliyahu was criticized for criticizing the Jewish people, and Yeshayahu Navi was criticized for criticizing the Jewish people. In all these instances, Klal Yisrael done much worse than simply declared that Muhammad is the God. In all these instances, the Bnei Yisrael had worshipped the Avodah Zarah, and they had done much more, committed much more serious sins. And yet, these great leaders, Moshe Rabbeinu, Eliyahu, and Yeshayahu, were chastised for criticizing the Bnei Yisrael on these occasions. So how dare this respondent should claim that someone who professes the Shahada should be excluded from the nation of God? And then he gets to the heart of the matter. And he says the following. He says that simply mentioning the name of the prophet, which everyone knows is not real, is not a violation of the Torah. The halacha of Yehorig Valyavor, that it's better to die rather than violate the Torah, is only if there's a requirement to action, not merely speech. In other words, there are three cardinal sins about which we have to give up our lives. That's murder, idolatry, and adultery. And even in times of religious persecution, we have to give up our lives rather than violate any Avera. But that's only by performing an action, not merely speech. Here, the Muslim sovereign merely required a verbal profession, not actions that controvert Jewish law. And the Rambam held that this declaration is not an action. And Jews were allowed to observe Jewish law in private while acknowledging Islam externally. And the Rambam writes that when a forced convert enters a mosque to pray to Allah, that he enters his home to pray to God, he does not sin. And this was a major salvation for so many Jews who were stuck. What should they do? Should they give up their lives? But how could they simply profess their allegiance to Muhammad? So they were so grateful by what the Rambam did in comforting them, that by professing the Shahada, by declaring their allegiance to Muhammad, they are not betraying God. And not only are they allowed to do this, but they're obligated to do this. In fact, the Rambam in Hilchos Yesodei Torah, Perkei Halacha Aleph, writes that in a situation where someone is told, either violate this sin or die, and you're allowed to violate the sin, but instead you choose to die, Harei Zeh Mischayav Benafsho, you've done the wrong things. You're culpable for putting yourself in a situation where you're giving up your life rather than violate a sin when you don't have to. The truth is, though, at the very end of his Igeres Hashmad, the Rambam writes that really the best idea is that you should leave these places. In these places where they make you profess the Shahada, he says that's the best way. The best way to go is to leave where you are so you can observe your religion without any type of pressure, and that's the optimal situation. You know, in 1165, Rav Yehuda ibn Shoshan, with whom the Rambam had studied, was arrested as a practicing Jew. He was found guilty, and then he was executed. And this was a sign to the Maimon family to move again, this time to Eretz Yisrael, which was in a depressed economic state and cannot offer them the basis of a livelihood. And because of this, they left Eretz Yisrael to travel to Egypt, and this is where we will begin our session next time.